Welcome to the month of May and the talk of Gasoline Alley on your home for the Indianapolis 500, 107.5, 1070 The Fan. 1070 is the frequency going back many, many years with WIBC. It's the heritage station in Indianapolis, and it is a privilege to be with you. My name is Kevin Lee. The star of the show is Donald Davidson, the historian of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and we are here to talk about the history of the track and this great race. Happy May, Donald. How are you?
Thank you, Kevin. I'm fine, and happy May to you, too.
It is great to see you here. We are excited to be back. Let's see. Let's do the math. So would this be, the 47th season of long-form Talk of Gasoline Alley programs.
Yes, they didn't call that to begin with. In fact, I don't think that title came in until about fourth or fifth year, I think. So we'll have to, I know we had some, the working titles. The early ones were Stump the Chump, and Lou Palmer called it Do It to Donald, and Chuck Riley called it Stymie the Limey. That was when we were, that was when it was a quiz program to give away prizes, but we managed to work out of that. After 3-4 years of doing that, I asked the people involved at the time, and I said, you know, some of these answers, right now we're just doing rapid fire question and answer, and you either win or you don't. And I said, some of these answers, there's an anecdote that I'd like to tell. And so they said, oh, that's okay. You can tell the anecdote. And over a period of one season, I managed to massage the program. So I just did anecdotes and no more call-in. But anyway, at some point, it was called the Talk of Gasoline Alley. And that might have been, we finally moved to the garage area because we did it in studio at the various locations. And then the first time, was it 82 or 83, we were actually at the track doing it out of the garage.
Oh,
area.
You were in the studio for the first decade plus.
Sure, okay. Yes. I mean, we used to be, this is ancient history now, but we used to be on North Illinois.
Yeah.
And around the time when they moved up to 92 North Meridian, it used to be 2835 North Illinois. And so then we actually did it in the lobby of the Speedway Motel one year. I think that was 83. And then we moved into the garage area proper. So we had a couple of years with the old garages and right by the phone booth in a Goodyear tire depot. Mm-hmm. And with a bunch of tires piled up. And then by 86, then we were in the garage area. And we did that actually for many years. We would be aligned with the team. And I really miss those days with the noises in the background, and occasionally an engine would fire up, and you'd hear the PA, you know, chief mechanics, bring your pop-off valves to USAC.
Yep.
I miss that. But
in
every
the
year since 71.
In the 60s, was there any kind of show that was a part-time show? Were you a regular guest on the radio station in the late 60s?
Well, actually, in 1966, we did one on old WIBC, 1070.
Uh-huh.
It was Sid Collins' idea, and it was called Dial Davidson.
Okay.
And it was a call-in show, and it was 15 minutes. It wasn't enough time. And then the next year, we didn't get to do it because when I had come over, when I had emigrated, I had to register with the local draft board. And as luck would have it, I was on basic training. Yep. Believe it or not, I was an American fighting man as a British subject. And so in 67, I couldn't do the show because I was at Fort Rucker, Alabama, and I didn't get back here until May 23rd. And then the next few years, there was no show. And then 1971... there was this sudden surge at 1070, so that's when the forerunner of this program began, and then the qualification coverage with Lou Palmer, and then later on Bob Lamy.
People are going to want to know, what kind of soldier was Donald Davidson?
Oh, well, I was a little out of my element. I the physical part was a bit of a struggle.
as it would be for most of us, as it would be. All right. Before I get to phone calls, I want to touch on you've been touring the state once again this year. I saw pictures on Twitter. It wasn't your Twitter account. I don't know whose it was.
No, it wasn't mine. It was.
But I saw pictures with Mark Dismore.
Yeah.
And Johnny Parsons was there. Who else before the headliner that I'll get to?
Tom Bigelow.
Okay, good.
Yes.
And then Tony Stewart was there.
Right. Uh-huh.
And I think you all kind of kept this hush-hush. Right?
Well,
was
I
it surprised everybody?
I didn't know. There's a story, if I could just weave this one. From 1974 until 1997, one of the highlights of my life was going down to Rushville to what they called Race Night. And it had started in 1970, and I got involved in 1974. And so they called up and said, can you come down and appear at the Knights of Columbus Hall in Rushville? And could you bring a driver? And so I went down there with Lloyd Ruby in 1974. And the next year they called up and said, could you bring another driver? So I took Tom Sneva. And after 2, 3, 4 years, I said, look, I love coming down there, but, they probably want a bit of a change. So they said, no, it's great for us because we want a driver, and it's easier if you just arrange for it. We're down here, you're up there, so just bring us somebody. And so what I would do, I was the Talk of Gasoline Alley in those days was from 6 until 7, and then I would have the driver meet me, and then we would hightail it down to Rushville and normally arrive about 20 past 8 and go in and do the program. So in 1998, they added a second program. And so I said, I'm afraid I can't come anymore. And so I think it went a couple more years and that just kind of faded away.
Oh, you're talking about the Network Indiana second hour.
Then that was the Network Indiana. Mm-hmm. So I actually did Talk of Gasoline Alley back to back, and just did the switch over during the break. Yes, absolutely. So anyway, it went away. And then when we started this thing last year by going around and visiting all the communities, and then we thought, well, could we create some events? So we've aligned with racetracks, and we did one at Salem. We did one up in Toledo at in connection with the racetrack, Springfield, Illinois, and Winchester. And so I thought to myself, Rushville Race Night, I wonder if we could crank that one up again. So it was right around the first of the year, and I called a fellow named Larry Martz down there. And Larry Martz is the fellow that Tony Stewart actually lived with the Martz family for, I think, about 3 years. He's from Columbus, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
And they call him the Rushville Rocket, but he lived there for about 3 years with his family. So I called up Larry and I said, what do you think about cranking up Rushville Race Night again? He said, oh, that'd be great. I said, well, would it work now? It's been a while. Has time passed away? He said, oh, no, I think they'd love to do it. So anyway, they settled on a date, and it was last Thursday. And it was just so special to be back there because I really enjoyed doing that. I mean, I did that for 24 years, I think. And the number of people that remembered and the real surprise, and another reason that I thought I think this might work, was last spring when Joe Hogsett became mayor, and I had met him many, many years ago, but it had been quite a while, and he'd just become mayor. And so when I ran into him, he said, I remember when you used to come down to Rushville. I said, really? And he said, oh, yes. He said, some people would say that was the highlight of the entire year when you'd come with a driver. And I said, did you go to those? And he said, yes. So I guess as a youth, you never know who's in the audience when you do these things. So anyway, in fact, he couldn't go. We invited him. He couldn't go, but he wrote a very, very nice letter that Mike Pavey, who's the mayor of Rushville, read the thing. This is a longer answer than you wanted. But anyway, I had mentioned it to Tony Stewart back in January. And I thought, that there's he won't go, but it's worth a shot. So Anyway, his dad was all set to go. The day before the Wednesday, I had another reason to call Tony, and I said, Rushville Race Night is tomorrow night. He said, oh, yes, I'm going to that. And I said, you are? And he said, yes. I said, I didn't know that. He said, yeah, when you told me about it in January, it's been on my calendar. I said, well, I never thought for a moment that you would go. Well, anyway, he went. And so we did a panel.
Was it promoted? Did people know he was coming that came?
Not until...
That's what I thought, yeah.
I said, well, it's tomorrow. I said, look, why don't we have you show up as a surprise?
Yeah.
And then if something happens, then they won't be disappointed if you if you don't make it. And he said, no, I'm going. So I said, well, is it okay if I tell them? And he said, sure. So anyway, they did. And I don't know if that added to the buzz that they already had. And sorry for this long answer, but I mean, I was just over the moon.
I think
going
that's incredibly
there.
Cool. And I know he's enjoying getting to do these kind of things that he hasn't ever been able to do.
Yes. Well, he used to do this. This was another thing. Tony used to go to that as a kid. And I remember specifically in 1994, I went down there with Jim Crawford, and Tony was sitting in the audience, and he had several times. And so his career was really taken off. And I actually made the statement that night, looking at Tony, he was sitting about three rows back with those eyes, you know, with those Tony Stewart eyes, when they're fixed on you, it's like that Dario Franchitti. It's a little unnerving when you look into those eyes. So anyway, I said, the time may come in the near future when I don't have to bring a driver down. Because you'll have one that's living here, and I've got referring, of course, to Tony. Well, last year when I met the mayor of Rushville, Mike Pavey, a year ago, the first thing he said was, he said, I remember when Rushville Race Night, and he said, when you said, the day will come, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we checked out the mayor's age. And he must have been about 11 or 12 when that happened, but he remembered that. Hmm. And so anyway, Tony ended up being the special guest in 96 and 97. And so here he was back again. And, he sat in the audience for a little bit with Tom Bigelow, and his dad came in, and Mark Dismore, and Tony was signing autographs, talking to people. And people had die-cast models. It was just a fantastic night. We figured they had about 300 people there.
That's great.
And sorry to go on so long about that, but all those years, I would do this show and then leave, and I'd take Roger Ward or Duke Nalen or Gary Bettenhausen and Scott Brayton and Stan Fox and Roberto Guerrero. It was just incredible memories, and to be standing there in front of those people, I'd never stopped doing it. And Tony was funny, and I'm just so grateful to all of those people for going.
Very good. Any more of these scheduled this month anywhere?
As a matter of fact, we've got three more. We're doing one tomorrow in Connersville, which isn't very far from Rushville. So we're doing a lunch tomorrow at the... Let's see, it's the Atrium Restaurant, and it's in the Baptist Church, and I think on East 5th Street, and it's a chamber event, but the public can go, as far as I know. I think there's a barbecue lunch or something like that, so we'll be doing that, and then we're doing, next week we're doing New Albany and Martinsville, and then I said I got to stay pretty close to home, so I can't travel around much. But it's just been a ball. I think we did 43 up through, Rushville, I think, we did Boonville. I went to Boonville on Friday, and that was our 43rd.
Okay. Apologies for delaying phone calls, because there's always a big wager on who's going to be on first and what the question will be.
We did one in Chicago, by the way, and Mike from Vernon Hills was there. And I told him, I said, that last year there were bets as to who would be the first caller, and it was him.
Well, we'll see who gets it this time. And I'm simply going to choose who got through to Joey first. And Joey did hang on up on people until, about 7:57?
Yeah.
Yeah, in that range. So we'll find out. Stay tuned for the Talk of Gasoline Alley on 107.5 and 1070 The Fan. It's the Talk of Gasoline Alley on 1070 The Fan, 107.5 FN. I'm Kevin Lee. Donald Davidson is here. When someone hangs up, that's your cue to call in at 317-239-1070. Also, a warning, a lot of Twitter questions have already been received. I still can't find Donald's Twitter address. But I will say this. I would say don't tweet your questions to me because they're going to get lost in the shuffle. I get a lot of Twitter comments, and we will do some email versions of questions on some shows that frankly we have to tape because of commitments. So, but there's no way for me to archive them through Twitter. But if you email them, I have a specific folder I can just drag them over to and then come back to them when we need them. I know we're going to do a couple of email only shows the week of the 500, maybe another one as well, and we'll let you know in advance if that is the case. So, unfortunately, I fear your Twitter questions are going to get lost in the shuffle. If you tweet something and I find it so interesting, then maybe I jump in with it. But generally, we try to go through as many phone calls as we can throughout the night. And the moment is here. Who will be first in 2017? It says Mike from Illinois. But I would really guess strongly that in Illinois, we're speaking specifically of Vernon Hills. Am I correct?
Correct, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
Hello.
All right, we've got a winner. Back-to-back years. How many years in a row is this, Mike?
I know. I feel like Larry Bisuglia.
Larry Bisuglia. Hi, Mike. It was good to see you up in Chicago the other day. We did an event at the Car Collector's Garage with Paul Goldsmith, and Mike was there. So
it was a great event, Donald, and Kevin really enjoyed the webcast with on the Fernando Alonso test.
Thank you.
Anyway, speaking of that, with all the excitement about Fernando Alonso racing at Indy, Donald, I wonder if you can talk about the starting field of the 1967 Indianapolis 500, which had quite a first.
Great question.
Oh yeah, that's come up quite a bit recently,
but not here.
As maybe. Maybe the most star-studded 500 lineup ever, made up of drivers who were at the top of their game at the time the race was run. And so you had Foyt and Parnelli Jones. You got Mario was fairly new on the scene. That was only his third start. And Al and Bobby Unser and Johnny Rutherford. But you had several Formula One drivers that were actually active Formula One drivers, and Jim Clark, Graham Hill, Dennis Holm, Jochen Rindt, Jackie Stewart, and Dan Gurney, I think, are the six that made the race. And Dan's an American, yeah, but he was a Formula One driver. And all of these people were back and forth, and because I think there was like two Grand Prix in May. And so, you know, they were back and forth across the Atlantic to qualify for a Grand Prix, come back, qualify for the 500, go back and run the Grand Prix. And then, and so anyway, in addition to them, there was Leroy Yarborough and Cale Yarborough. And then the rest of the field was sprint and a lot of sprint midget people like Larry Dixon and Mel Kenyon. And then, you know, future stars. Wally Dallenbach was a rookie that year and would become one of the great drivers. In fact, right up there with the more one of the potential winners who was never able to win. But it was just fantastic. And I don't know that I really appreciated it at the time with all of these great Grand Prix drivers who were active. And then the people that missed the show, that was amazing. Chris Amon, Pedro Rodriguez, Richie Ginther were all there and did not qualify, as well as a bunch of the names that you'd be more familiar with around the oval track. So, all of this has sort of come to the fore again because of Alonso entering this year, which was huge. And by the way, I was completely taken by that one. I don't know if you'd heard any of the rumors, but I had not. And
we knew he wanted to do it, but it was a surprise that it was going to happen this year.
I never even heard it discussed. And then 6:45 on the news in the morning, I'm watching, and whoa, I had no idea that was going to happen. And I told my wife, I said, look, you don't know who this guy is, but this is huge because of the fact that he is a current Formula One driver. And so we've had in recent years, Rubens Barrichello, Jean Alesi, Michele Alboreto, but they were all out of Formula One at the time they came. And I think what a wonderful shot in the arm it is, because it just brings so much international interest. I heard you fellows talking about it on the way down here. And to me, it's huge. I've been telling people, you know, you've got the Grand Prix enthusiasts who maybe don't have that much of an interest in Indianapolis, and it gets them into it. You've got the foreign people who live in the United States, the residents who.
Sure.
But I remember at Grand Prix time, I've been talking to a lot of people about this. The first year for Formula One, there were a lot of people that came from overseas to see the race and then went back. And then next year, 9/11 hit, but the number of overseas visitors was going to be down. But in the next few years thereafter, I'd walk around and I'd hear all these accents. I'd hear, you know, Irish, Australian, Italian, and South, you know, obviously South American. I'd get to talk to these people, and then I'd say, "So, where exactly are you from?" And it would be Miami,
yeah.
Chicago,
they live in America,
Los Angeles, mm-hmm. And so I can see a huge contingent of foreign nationals who either became citizens or they're just living in the United States, and they will come. So I think Alonso, it's huge for the event.
Maybe you know the answer to this. Mario Andretti was mentioning, you know, because people asked, well, could the new American owners of Formula One change the date of Monaco to make this more likely in the future? Is there a specific reason why Monaco is that weekend? He alluded to a holiday that I can't recall the exact phrase, but it is there for a specific point in the calendar.
I don't know the answer to that. I know that it has been earlier in the month. And then, of course, when you went back to the Indianapolis 500 being on May the 30th, prior to 71, when it was on a weekday, then the 500 could be on, you know, Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever it was, so there wouldn't be the conflict there. But I don't know that it's always been on this equivalent, on the equivalent weekend for any more than just a few years. But I don't know if that would be possible that they might move the date. I mean, it's very interesting that there seems to be new thinking now. Mm-hmm. A certain gentleman who was heavily involved and now doesn't quite have the control that he did made the statement about Alonso, "I would have blocked this."
Mm-hmm.
Oh, thank you. What a lovely attitude. Thank
you
so
much. We knew he would have.
Yes, thank you. It infuriates me that was allowed to happen all of those years. Why wouldn't the great drivers of the world be allowed to go and run the events that they want to?
This is good for Formula One.
It's
as
good
well.
For everybody.
Yes.
And I've had this conversation with the drivers. Everybody became a specialist. And I had this conversation with Elio Castroneves a few years ago when he said he loves talking to Mario about the days when they would all go and do everything. I said, "Well, would you do that?" And he said, "Yes." And
they all would.
It even got to the point. I said, "Would you run Le Mans?" He said, "Yes." And I said, "What about Daytona?" And I said, "I don't mean the 24 hours. Supposing you had an opportunity to run in the Daytona 500. This is Castroneves." And he said to me, "Absolutely," just like that.
Yeah.
And I thought, isn't that a shame? Wouldn't it be great if Scott Dixon Hunter Ray and Hinchcliffe or Damon would go down and run the Daytona 500 and then, run Sebring and go to Le Mans? The interchange of driver, sort of an opinion of mine, back to the 67 thing, at the time, I didn't really appreciate it, and I was working for USAC. And so I was, I felt for the USAC regulars that drove midgets and sprints and champ dirt cars and were, you know, busting their butts, if you pardon the expression, to just make a living and keep a reputation so that they could have an opportunity to drive at Indianapolis. And then somebody like Jochen Rindt, who just obviously didn't like it and was very upfront about it, I thought, isn't that a shame that he's come in on a tire deal and gets a good car, and Ronnie Duman and Bob Mathauser and Carl Williams would love to have that ride.
Yeah.
And so, but anyway, then things changed and went the other way. And, you know, Regazzoni showed up here. But as far as them at the top of their game, wouldn't it be great if everybody that had the ability could go and run the races that they wanted to? Wouldn't that be great?
I believe that each of the motorsports categories should work with each other so that their big events are open and do what they can to include others.
Yeah.
To have a few from IndyCar run the Daytona 500.
Yes.
To have a few from NASCAR run the Indianapolis 500.
Yeah.
It's not really conceivable to say have anyone else run Monaco. That Formula One doesn't really work that way.
That's
but
correct.
Run Le Mans, run the Rolex 24.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would help grow all of the series and the sports, but that's probably just a dream.
There used to be, NASCAR used to open in January with the Riverside 500.
Mm-hmm.
It was a 500-mile NASCAR race on a road course, and you had this wonderful mix of drivers with the USAC regulars and the NASCAR regulars.
It was like an all-star race.
It was an all-star race, and you had road racers. I mean, Sam Posey and Bobby Rahal drove in a NASCAR race on a road course. And I just wish we could see more of that again.
Mike, thank you for the call. We'll get to other questions for Donald coming up on the Talk of Gasoline Alley, 107.5, 1070 The Fan. It's the Talk of Gasoline Alley with Donald Davidson on 1070 The Fan, 107.5 FM. And Jonathan in Beaver Creek, Ohio is up with us next. Hi, Jonathan.
Hello. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi, Jonathan.
Glad to talk to you guys again after the off season. I've been taking notes as I've been reading and listening to things over the off season about names that I don't recall you talking about recently.
Okay.
And one that I don't remember that I would like to hear about is Bobby Marshman.
Oh, I'd love to talk about Bobby Marshman. He's come up quite a bit recently, and a really clean-cut young man at a time when you know, not everybody was quite so polished. And I started using the phrase recently. I mean, when I met Bobby Marshman in my first year in '64, and he just had this aura about him, and he was clearly a superstar of the future. In fact, I thought he was going to win the 64 500. I think he was right up there with the top picks. And I would say what I've been saying recently is that he was Rick Mears before you had Rick Mears.
Wow.
And that if Roger Penske had a team in 1964, Bobby Marshman would have been a Penske driver. He was from Pottstown, Pennsylvania. His dad was a driver. George Marshman drove midgets and was later a promoter. And Bobby had a very short career at the Speedway, 1961 through 64. And he was the co-rookie of the year in 61. He drove the Hoover Motor Express Special. In fact, there's a little story there. He came back looking for a ride, did not find one, and actually left after the first qualifying weekend and went home. And the Hoover Motor Express people, Joe Langley, chief mechanic, they'd qualified Don Branson for the middle of the front row, and they had an older Epperly laydown car. And so they said, well, let's see. why don't we try that Bobby Marshman guy? And he'd already left, so they had to call him, and so he came back, qualified, started on the outside of the last row, and he ended up seventh. And he split the Rookie of the Year balloting with Parnelli Jones. They actually was a tie. So, in spite of him going from 33rd to 7th, friends told me, Bill Marvel being one, they said that actually he was down on his own performance because he said, well, I didn't pass anybody because there was a lot of attrition. And he said, I just sat out there and ran. I didn't race anybody. And so the next year then, with the Brian Heating and Cooling Special, number 54, he was on the outside of the front row and finished 5th. And then in 63, he had another top 10 going. I used to love the car names, the Econo Car Rental Special. And he was running in, I think, like 6th or 7th, and then dropped out with 6 laps to go. So that dropped him down to 16th, because in those days, they let as many cars go 500 miles as possible. And so the race went about another 14, 15 minutes, which dropped him down to 16th. And then in 64, with a previous year's Lotus, another great car named the Pure Oil Firebird Special. And every day in May, just about every day, he was the fastest. And the speeds were going up and up and up. The track record at the time was 151 miles an hour. And let's see, on the morning of the 64 race, he did an unofficial 160. And then when he went out to qualify, he was one of the first ones to go out. He qualified at like 157 or 158 or something, and was so despondent. You see the films, he's coming in and he's just nodding his head from side to side as if to say that won't do it. And indeed, it did hold up for the pole until Jim Clark went out and knocked him off. Off the pole. Well, the race started. We had the accident with Sax McDonald. We don't want to go into that. They cleared up the track, restarted, and Jim Clark was the early leader, but then he was passed by Bobby Marshman. And so I was, this was my first year, and I'm standing down going into turn one, and I had a set of double stopwatches that had been given to me by Dick McGeorge of Champion Spark Plug Company. And in fact, Bobby Marshman actually was down there with me one day while I was operating them, and he was looking over my shoulder to see how I was doing, which was a real kick. He was a great guy. So now here I am timing him. And I thought, I must be doing this wrong, because he's building a lead on Jim Clark, according to what I'm looking at, 2 to 2.5 seconds a lap. That can't be right. Well, it was. And in no time at all, he had like a half a minute lead on Clark. And then he dropped out he'd bottomed out, trying to lap Johnny White. He'd gone so low that and the Lotus sat really low. So he went, and this is before the nice smooth warm-up lanes. If you went below the line back then, it was pretty rough, and it ripped out an oil plug. And so he had other problems as well. And so I think it was like lap 39, he was out of the race and walked back very despondent. Anyway, I remember that after I got back and Dynamic made a 16mm film and a copy was sent to me. And when I ran that, it showed Jack Beckley, the chief mechanic, was out, had left the pits. And he went out onto the grass verge next to the wall and was running the pit board. And at one time he had chalked on the pit board, because there's no two-way radios and spotters in those days. And he had chalked on the pit board, cool it, just COOLIT, and waving his finger with one hand. So anyway, years later, Jack, who was a great guy, very, very good to me, ended up at USAC, and he was the tech chairman. And I was talking to him about that one day, and he said, oh, yes. He said, we were trying to slow him down because he said he was obsessed with lapping Foyt. That's what he wanted to do because he had finished second to Foyt so many times. And if you look at the race results, there were several times on 100-mile dirt track races where Foyt was first and Bobby Marshman was second. And he said that now he had the advantage because Foyt had decided to stay with the Watson Roadster. Bobby was going so much faster. And he said he was his ambition was he wanted to lap Foyt. But anyway, I should probably wind this up. Bobby did lose his life at the end of that year. The season was over. The last race was at Phoenix, and they stayed over to do some additional tests. And he crashed and was another victim of burns. It was really tragic times there. But anyway, he was very highly thought of, and I know Colin Chapman was eyeing him, and there was some talk that they might be interested in having him go to Europe. They were interested in Parnelli Jones, and they were interested in Bobby Marshman. And what I was told was that when the mechanics went back to England, the ones that hadn't gone said, who's this Bobby Marshman? And what they said was, well, he's sort of an English Jimmy, referring to Clark, which was a huge compliment. And so who knows what would have happened. I think very likely he would have been the winner of the 65-500 looked like he would have had a Rick Mears career before we had Rick Mears. And as wow. I say, if Penske was running a team at that time, Bobby Marshman was grade A Penske material. Mm. Great, great man. And it was a honor. It was a really nice man. And I think of him a lot, and there's a lot of mystique about him. In fact, Michael Argertzinger, who was Cameron Argertzinger that had Watkins Glen, was the promoter there for several years, had a number of children. One of them, Michael Argertzinger, who's deceased now, had written several books. He did one on Walt Hanscom. He did one on Mark Donahue. And he called me one day and he said, well, he said, I'm working on my next project. And he said, it might surprise you. I said, okay, who are you going to do this time? And he said, Bobby Marshman. I said, really? He said, yeah, what do you think about that? I said, I think that would be terrific. I was just surprised that Michael Argertzinger, a road racer, would want to do Bobby Marshman. But anyway, so I said, I think that would do very well because there's so much mystique about him. And Michael had the job far along, and he's now deceased. And I think his brother and his sister, I think, have been working on it. And hopefully that'll come out. That'll be a great read.
Good question. Thank you, Jonathan. More for Donald coming up. 107.5 1070 The Fan. Final segment for our opening night. The good news is we're back again tomorrow night. Kevin in Illinois is up next with Donald Davidson.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, Donald. Thanks for taking my call, guys. It's not May until we hear from you, Donald. It's great to be on. I was wondering if reminiscing and bringing my kids to their first race here coming up and reminiscing back to mine 30 years ago. One of my favorite voices over the PA system, and I've never heard a profile on him, could you do Jim Phillippe for me?
Yes, Jim Phillippe, golly, he was on the PA for years, and typically what he would do, he would do interviews. In fact, he interviewed me when I was on the PA my second day at the track the second day of qualifying, and I was on the PA with Jim Phillippe and Fred Agabasian. Jim's role was normally to do the post-qualification run interview. So when you came in, that's who you were interviewed by and got to thank all your sponsors and everything like that. But let's see, he was, I'm going to get myself in trouble here. He was a professor at Butler.
Correct.
I believe.
Yes.
In fact, I think he took, I think Tom Carnegie had done that for a while. And then Jim Phillippe came in when Tom stopped doing that. I believe that's right. But for a number of years, I'm trying to think of the people now that I have that went into the business, both locally and you know, in other parts of the country, that were his students, if that would be the correct term.
Well, but some would be like Dave and Kevin Calabro.
They were okay.
Scott Hoke went to Butler, I believe. Yeah. Those are, and I'm sure I'm, and some of the, you know, like a Rich Nye went to Butler, but I don't know if Jim was still there. These are Indianapolis people. Although Kevin Calabro was a national guy, he's one of the top play-by-play guys in the country.
Oh yes, in fact,
and
Kevin,
most know Dave is now the lead public address announcer.
Kevin actually was the host of the Talk of Gasoline Alley. In the he wasn't the first one, but one of the early ones. I think I was with him for, golly, 4 or 5 years, I think.
Yeah, and a big race fan. And I saw him out at the track a few years ago. And for those, he's in the business that I'm in, and there's nobody better at this than Kevin Calabro.
I'd love to see him again. Yeah. It's been years since I saw him. But another thing Jim would do was he used to do the memorial.
Mm-hmm.
And it was part of the pre-race ceremonies very much, and then he would do the lead in to whoever was saying, "Gentlemen, start your engines." And
if you look at a lot of the pictures, you'll see Jim there.
Well, it was funny because you had Jim, and then you had Luke Walton was doing it for the radio network. And the two of them were both talking at the same time, and both hopefully that they would end up with a tie when it was time for the gentleman to start your engines. But yeah, Jim was a great guy, and golly, look at all the people that he interviewed. But so that voice was very distinctive, and a lot of people miss the when he used to do the memorial on race morning when it was on Memorial Day.
Good question. Thank you for reminding us to share some stories of Jim Phillippe. We were asking. I looked it up. I wondered when he passed. He passed in 2003. So I knew it was at least 10 years, and actually we're talking a little more than that. So very, very nice gentleman, and one of the legends of the Speedway, one of the characters that we all remember so well. Mm-hmm. A good opening night, Donald. We will try again tomorrow night. Paul, call in, and we'll put you on leadoff tomorrow night on the program. Thank you, Donald. Enjoy your talk tomorrow in Connersville. And tomorrow night, we're going to remind people about the event with Scott Goodyear and Al Unser Jr. that's coming up at the IMS Museum Tuesday night of race week.
Tuesday the 23rd.
Tuesday night of race week. And 1070thefan.com has details on that. But we'll talk about that tomorrow night. Thanks to Joey Molinaro. For Donald, I'm Kevin. We'll see you tomorrow night at 7 on Trackside on 107.5 and 1070 The Fan.